Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. Good morning. You are listening to Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. And this week, as I'm sure you've guessed from our intro music that we're going to be talking all about the heart, probably the most vital organ in our body and one which we have a very emotional and more artistic connection to. It's not like we have sayings such as follow your brain or home is where the stomach is, although that one's probably true for dogs. And coming up, we'll be looking at what causes our hearts to break, how to grow a new one, and what a breaking heart sounds like. So the question we'll be asking you, listeners, is how do you mend your broken heart? If you have any advice, please tweet us at Soho Radio. Now, joining me this week to help me discuss all things the heart is Nina Cheetah, a biologist with a special interest in regenerative medicine and in particular, the heart. Good morning, Nina. How are you? Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I'm well, thank you.
How's your heart feeling this morning?
A bit fluttery.
Typical nerves. Oh, and so for our experiment this week, we will be making a DIY stethoscope. All you need for this is a funnel, some plastic tubing or a cardboard tube, maybe for like a toilet roll, scissors, tape and a balloon. Nina, you've chosen all the music today and you've got a theme.
Yeah, so I've based each song on the steps required to build a new heart.
And what's your first song?
The first song is...
Florence and the Machine, Florence Rabbit Heart.
Yes. Yes, and that just signifies the first step is to actually get a heart.
In developing embryos, the first heart cell starts to beat as early as 4 weeks.
That is amazing. And you were actually saying just now, Nina, it's the first organ to be fully developed.
Yeah, it's the first organ that we get. So, and it's probably the most important as well.
Yes, indeed, I'd say so. Now, we're talking all about how we grow a heart and... Mm-hmm. You're not talking about growing it as we grow as babies.
No.
You're talking about growing one in the lab.
Yep, a whole new heart.
This is incredible because the heart is so complicated. It's not like skin's pretty complicated as well, but we have grown skin.
Yeah.
We've done skin grafts and stuff, but the heart, an actual functioning beating heart, how on earth do you go about that?
I know. As you said, it's a really complex organ. I mean, it is made out of lots of different muscle cells, but it's not just any muscle, it's a muscle that graduated and went to university.
So a cerebral muscle right there.
So first of all, it's asymmetric, it's not symmetrical structure. It's made out of different types of cells. So you've got the heart cells, which are called cardiomyocytes, and then you've got endothelial cells, fibroblasts, nerve cells, and then the sheer number of cells. I mean, you're looking at 1 billion cells per cubic centimetre of heart.
Wow, so, 1 billion per cubic centimetre.
Yeah.
So how long does it take to grow something that much?
You could probably get about, when they've done these experiments, they've grown about 500 million cells and it's taken about 14 days, I think, in order for it to express the cardiomyocyte genes.
That's kind of quicker than I thought,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it is quicker, but the whole process does take quite a while.
Yes.
And then also with the heart as well, it's very capillary dense. It needs a really good blood supply. So there's around 3,000 to 4,000 capillaries per millimetre cubed.
Wow. And that's because the heart cells are constantly beating, so the muscle is constantly moving and constantly needs that oxygen.
Yeah, and it constantly needs nutrients and constantly needs those waste products to be taken away. So, I mean, yeah, so creating a new heart is not for the faint-hearted.
I like what you did there.
So this is a really novel technique that allows constructing really complex organs like the heart possible. And it's using the original heart as a blueprint, sound quite odd.
If I was kind of ill, you'd be taking my original heart or you'd be taking someone else's?
No, so you would be taking an organ donor's heart.
Mm-hmm.
And this deals with the whole problem of immune rejection from heart transplants.
And that's when your body is going, this is foreign, get it out, and rejects the other person's organ.
And tries to destroy it. So the first step is to find a heart, and then you have to remove all the cells from it. So what are you left with? So the actual cells of your heart, they spew out these proteins which make something called the extracellular matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all structural, and it preserves the shape of the organ, and it helps with the function of pumping as well.
Is it kind of like a scaffolding for cells?
Yeah, it's a scaffold. So we remove cells using detergents.
Like washing up liquid?
Yeah.
Really?
But a bit stronger.
Oh, it's so high tech. Take my organs, strong washing up liquid.
Just give it a wash. Yeah, it is quite... that step takes 60 days to remove all of the cells they've done it with a whole human heart. And then what you're left with is a pale mesh of structural proteins. And it's a very delicate procedure because you need to remove most of the cells or as many as possible, yet preserve this structure that they've left behind. And then the next step is to grow some cells. And as I mentioned before, this is a really difficult thing to do because...
You're not just growing one of the same type of cell. You're growing lots of different ones. You want to get them to change into the right types
in
the
exactly.
right places.
And you need billions of them in order to repopulate an entire heart. So what they've usually done is used human... induced pluripotent stem cells.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. What is a pluripotent stem cell?
So this is you can get cells from the patient. They're called fibroblasts and they're located in many different organs, including your skin. And they are reprogrammed, so they are changed to the embryonic state as they were before. And at this state, they can go and develop into any different cell.
Yeah, because if we think about it, when we are embryos, we're starting from one egg and sperm, and we're able to turn into all of the different cells that we, our cells as they grow, are able to turn into all the different ones that we need in our body, like eye and heart, liver.
Yeah, okay. So we're just reprogramming them back to the ones in the embryo.
And we might be talking more about how we do that at the end of the show.
Yes, we'll come back to that. So when we've got these cells, you have to direct them to become cardiomyocytes.
So giving them signals so they know to turn into a heart cell.
Yes, yeah. And then the next step is to inject these cells into your heart scaffold, this blueprint that we created before. And then we just wait. So the heart is placed in something called a bioreactor, which mimics the physical environment that the heart is usually in. So I think a good thing that this is based on is kind of like the kidney dialysis devices that you get in hospital.
Okay.
You know, where they remove the waste and then they pump things back in.
Yeah, they sort of
to your body.
Almost, it's like they make the patient's blood go out through a machine and then back into their body, and the machine does the job of the kidney.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the same with a bioreactor. So you have a tube pumping nutrients and things in, and then you've got another tube removing all the waste products. And then they actually place a balloon into the ventricle of the heart, which expands.
The ventricle, just for anyone who didn't recognise that word, the ventricle is one of the chambers, or you have two ventricles, two of the chambers in the heart where the blood goes, and then it will squeeze to push it out into your body.
Yeah. So they put a balloon in this part, and it expands and collapses just to mimic the pumping action of the heart.
Oh, so as it's growing, we are doing the pumping.
Yeah. Yeah, so this mechanical stimulation actually stimulates all the cardiomyocytes to form tissues that are able to contract, and it gets it used to that action whilst it's all developing.
Wow.
So, and it's amazing, by 14 days, you can form a contracting tissue on a heart scaffold.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
And so how far have they got with this technology? Have they managed to grow an entire heart?
No. So the only entire heart they've managed to do is that of a rat.
And it's quite a lot smaller.
Yeah. Just a bit of a difference. And it was only able to pump about 2% that of a adult rat heart. So it was about a 16-week-old neonatal rat. So it wasn't a really strong pump.
It hadn't graduated yet.
No.
The muscles were still in training.
Yeah. So they've actually tried part of the technique using a human heart. So they've done the whole taking off all these cells, and they've repopulated the left ventricle. The reason they chose the left one is because that one has the most capillaries. Mm. So it's very, I guess it's got more oxygen and nutrients going to that area. So it's a bit easier to create a tissue. So they managed to recellularize the left ventricle, and it managed to contract as well. So it is promising because it can be done on a clinical scale.
Wow, yeah. That's incredible. So we haven't made a whole heart yet.
No,
but we're on our way there.
We might be there.
Time for another song. What have you chosen next? I can remind you, you've chosen yes. Loose Leaves by Bright Eyes.
Yes.
But why have you chosen this one?
So I have chosen this to represent removal of the cells, which is the second step of creating your own heart. The life's a slippery slope, regret's the steepest hill. Hope for the best, plan for the worst, and maybe wind up somewhere in the middle.
You really can die from a broken heart. Broken heart syndrome, also called stress-induced cardiomyopathy, which is another word for heart attack, can be triggered by an emotional event and can lead to a short-term heart muscle failure. Luckily, most people make a full recovery.
That's crazy. I think that's crazy that an emotional or stressful like event can actually cause a heart attack.
Yeah, that's really astonishing.
Well, we've just been talking about how we can grow a new heart, but what would be the reasons for needing a new heart? I mean, it's obviously a really important muscle in a muscle organ in our body, and you know, it delivers oxygen and nutrients, and without it we do die. But how do you get to the point, because a heart attack is very sudden,
yeah,
so how do you get to the point where you know that your heart's not good enough, that you need a new one, but you're not actually, you know, it's you're still alive?
So it's when the heart fails to pump blood around the body effectively. So this is termed heart failure. And you can notice it from, you get fluid build up in your legs, and you feel tired. You can't do normal activities as you were able to. And if you put too much strain on yourself, you could end up killing yourself.
Really?
Yeah.
So heart failure is when you would be eligible for a heart transplant.
Yes, yes. So heart failure, though, comes about from cardiovascular disease. So when you have a heart attack, you do lose a lot of cells. So also,
should we just explain what's happening when we have a heart attack?
Yeah. So basically, a heart attack occurs when there's a blockage of the main artery that supplies the heart with blood, called the coronary artery.
Uh-huh. So then the heart's not getting the oxygen it needs to beat.
Yeah, the oxygen and nutrients. So, I mean, a good way to think of this is what happens when your sink gets blocked. The water can't move through it as effectively, and you get a build-up of the water. So basically this depletion of nutrients and oxygen leads to cell death in your heart. And our healing response is the formation of scar tissue, not replacement with new heart cells.
So it's not like the whole of your heart has died at once. It's just like a small area of the muscle.
A section, but it does make a difference. And depending on how big this heart attack area is, depends on your recovery and, you know, what happens in the future. The thing is, the scar tissue that is formed, it can't contract. So it's basically...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's useless.
It's useless, yeah.
It's not helping you pump that blood.
No, no, you don't want it on your heart. So, I think I mentioned before that the other heart cells, the other cardiomyocytes can't regenerate to replace those that are lost.
No.
So
it's not like skin, you don't just grow new ones.
No, no. So there are treatments available. You can have medication, lifestyle changes, but they're just not good enough. And at the very final stages where you're waiting for a heart transplant, they can implant a ventricular assist device, which helps pump blood around the body. So
is that like a pacemaker?
Yeah, it's a little bit like a pacemaker, apart from it's an actual pump.
It helps the muscle to actually move and contract.
It kind of replaces it because it's a tube that empties one of the chambers of the heart and connects it up to the artery, so it pushes it out and pumps it through the body.
Oh, so it almost like bypasses the actual heart.
Yeah,
is a replacement chamber. Got it.
And I think that's really uncumbersome because, you know, you have to have a battery pack on the outside, and so it doesn't fully replace the function of the heart. So the only definitive treatment for end-stage heart failure is an actual heart transplant.
Ooh, the microphone's adding some spooky sound effects right there.
Dramatic effects.
Yeah. The first ever heart transplant was actually not performed until 1967.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like less than 50 years ago.
Wow.
So it's...
Gosh, that's a big operation.
Yeah. They have to do it so quickly, don't they? It's like in, out, still using. I think whoever came up with that idea just must have been so bold.
Yeah.
To be like, yeah, we can take this live beating organ and put it in your body.
Yeah.
Incredible. So what got you so interested in the heart in the first place?
So in my family, we've had quite a long history of heart disease. So my uncle actually died from a large heart attack, and my dad has had about three or four heart attacks now. As a family, we've been used to heart disease, and we've seen a lot of it. We've seen the effects of it, and actually, so recently, my niece as well, she was born with a hole in her heart.
What does that mean?
So there was a hole between the chambers of her heart, so the blood wasn't separated properly, so it just makes it hard to deliver oxygen to all the tissues in your body.
Yes, for anyone who is struggling to remember their GCSE biology, so you've got half of your heart, the right-hand side, pumps the blood to your lungs, picks up oxygen, then it comes back to the left-hand side of your heart and gets pumped out to the body. So it sort of comes back, gets a bit more pressure for the rest of the body. But so if she has a hole, then that oxygenated blood is mixing with the non-oxygenated blood.
So as a family, we've had quite a lot of heart problems.
Yes, I can see that definitely would make you be interested in it.
So, particularly for my own future as well. Build a heart so I can have one.
And heart attack and heart failure they're the main heart diseases, and they're all caused by cardiovascular disease, you were saying.
Yeah, so heart failure can also be caused by diseases of the heart tissue and even use of recreational drugs.
Oh, in what way?
Oh, I'm not sure about how drugs can affect the heart so much, but
Oh, I guess, some of them I know, like the stimulant-y ones, I guess, just make it beat really fast. Maybe it gets overexertion or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? If you know, you can tweet us. And arrhythmia as well. It's not a full-on heart disease, but it can be a sign that something's going wrong, can't it, when you get heart palpitations?
Yes, it can be.
Well, heart disease, cardiovascular disease, a lot of people say that it's like a modern disease with our terrible diets, because it's basically fatty deposits being laid down in your blood vessels, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that narrows them, so it's harder for the blood to get through. Your heart has to work harder. But actually, I didn't know this. They recently found heart disease, or the signs of heart disease, in a 3,000-year-old mummy.
Oh, wow.
So it's not such a modern phenomenon after all.
It's been around for a while.
On to your next song, Nina, which is David Bowie and Changes. Now, how does this relate to growing a heart?
Yeah, so this, going back to our point of growing new cells, and we have to change skin cells from the patient into cardiomyocytes. So this reflects a change of cells.
Changes. Don't tell them to blow up on all of it. Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes. Where's the shame you've left us up to her next to me? Time may change me, but you can't twist time. Strange fascination, fascinating.
The human heart beats 100,000 times a day, propelling your blood through 60,000 miles of blood vessels. That's 20 times the distance across the US.
That's incredible.
Just to add to that fact as well, I think the human heart beats out about 5 litres of blood a day.
Yeah, yeah, on average, that's how much we have in our body. So next time you're buying milk, just think about it. That, you know, you can get those like four pint ones.
Oh gosh.
Four litre ones. What am I trying to say? And you'll be like, oh, that's nearly as much blood as in my body. Right. Well, if you have just tuned in, we are in time for our DIY stethoscope making.
Oh, exciting.
I love the invention of the stethoscope. It was actually invented because the Victorians were so prude. Before the stethoscope, the only way for a doctor to hear your heart was to literally get you to take off all your kind of clothes and stick his ear on your chest, which for a lady was really not okay. So someone invented the stethoscope to allow the doctor to maintain his distance and the patient to maintain their modesty. Now, we said at the top of the show that ideally you will need a funnel. If you can't find a funnel, like a kind of, I've seen it done with like the lid of a medicine bottle maybe, and you sort of drill a hole through it. Or today, we've made our own funnel out of cardboard. So let's see how that goes. And then some sort of plastic tubing, or failing that, a cardboard tube as well. Plastic tubing's cooler. And a balloon. So the first thing I'm going to ask you to do, Nina, is to cut the balloon in the middle that it's got a nice kind of flat hole. Okay. And then once you have got a nice hole, you're going to stretch the balloon over the bottom of your funnel. And this is making what we call the diaphragm, and it's going to amplify any vibrations that hit it. So as your heart beats in your chest, it's going to be making vibrations, and the diaphragm will be affected by those vibrations and will then push the air in the funnel. And as we all know, a sound wave is just vibrations in the air. So once you've got your balloon in place, you want to stretch it nice and tightly over the funnel. Try not to have any lumps. And then you want to tape it in place with some sellotape, because you want it nice and airtight. You don't want any of those nice air vibrations escaping. And then the next thing you want to do is attach your tube to the funnel as well. And you just need to stick that in. And again, put lots of tape around it to make it nice and airtight. And once you've got that all in place, you can rest it against your heart. So you're going for like the spaces between your ribs, and that kind of amplifies the noise that it's making. And most people don't realize that actually what you're hearing when you're hearing a heartbeat is you're not hearing the muscles contracting, you're not hearing the blood rushing around, you're just hearing the valves closing again. Nina, would you mind telling us exactly what the valves are, or like why we have valves in our heart?
So we have valves in our heart to separate the four different chambers, which also separates the oxygenated and deoxygenated blood.
And we want to make sure that the blood does not flow backwards. Right, okay. So we have finally finished our stethoscope. Nina, would
this
you like
great.
To try listening to my heart?
So what do I do?
You need to place it on my chest. So here we go. As modestly as possible.
Oh, wow. That'd be my bad hearing. One moment.
I'm going to play the listeners what a heart, a normal healthy heart, should sound like. So this is a normal healthy heart. That familiar lub-dub, 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 lub-dub. That is two different sets of valves closing as the blood passes through them. Now, if you are a qualified doctor, you will be able to diagnose different heart problems according to what we call heart murmurs. And that's when the sounds don't sound quite right. So this one has got something called a ventricular gallop. And you'll hear that that second beat has like a dun rather than a... You almost have three beats rather than two. This one is a stenosis murmur. And that you can really hear the kind of shushing sound that shows that that valve is not properly closing. Or one of my favourites is the one with the snap. And the clicks. And these are real heart sounds that people actually hear when they're diagnosing heart murmurs in your chest. It's crazy.
Yeah.
That it can sound so different.
Yeah, you can really tell the difference.
So the crucial thing is to have that balloon that will amplify the beating of the heart and send it down the tube to your ears. So there we go. And your average heart beats 70 times a minute. Wow. So you want to see if you can count your pulse. And are you below or above average? Now, coming on to our next song, Nina, you've chosen Carl Jenkins, Toledo.
Yes. Yeah, and this was to signify seeding it onto the heart scaffold and waiting.
Ominous music, as you said.
Yes, ominous music.
Growing of the cells, growing your army of cells.
The salamander can regenerate its own heart throughout its life, as well as its limbs, tail, brain, eye tissues, kidney and spinal cord.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Science Mixtape on Soho Radio, and this week we are talking all about the heart. We asked you at the top of the show, how do you mend your broken heart? And producer Yaz, have we had any offers of
we've
advice?
We've had varied responses. Daniel Cassidy says that he has a whole method, the SAT method, which is sex, alcohol and time. But then he does go on to say that channeling his energy into becoming the ultimate Pokemon master is also useful. So I guess it's just whatever works for you.
Brilliant. Thank you for that one, Daniel. I have to say, I do agree. I think time is the best.
Time is important.
Yeah, the healer of all. Nina, can I just say thank you so much for that song choice? Oh my God, so Carl Jenkins, Toledo, if you'd missed it, that's what the song was just before. We were getting very excited here in the studio. So dramatic and epic.
Yeah, it's a really good song.
Now, we've talked just about the heart, but you're pretty interested in regenerative medicine in general. Mm-hmm. And are there any other organs, because obviously the heart is a very complex one, that we've managed to grow and put into people's bodies?
The complex organs, they've got the same complications as a heart, mainly being able to
deliver all the oxygen and nutrients to growing tissue. So they've tried the same technique with lungs and kidney, but then actual successful organ transplantation organs include some more simple structures. So there's the trachea, which connects your lungs to the mouth, and it funnels your windpipe, and that funnels air down to the lungs, and that's and also some blood vessels and also bladder as well, because these are basically you can just make a sheet and roll them up into a tube structure.
Oh, so they don't need so much of a scaffold.
No. Yeah, you can just use.
God, that's crazy. That's like flat pack organs.
Yeah.
Here you go. Here's your sheet of bladder.
Roll it up yourself.
Stick it in.
Yep. They do have a scaffold, but it's a lot less complex and it degrades over time. But the thing about these is they don't require all those capillaries in order to grow. You can just place it in a bioreactor and allow oxygen to diffuse to these I keep hitting
you're just loving those dramatic sounds.
Yeah. So with these you can just allow oxygen to diffuse into these organs, and when you transplant it, the vasculature will develop over the organ over time. So in 2008 they transplanted a trachea and transplanted it into a person.
Really?
Yeah.
Back in 2008?
Yeah, back in 2008. So, wow. I mean, that's 8 years ago now.
And that person's fine and, like, healthy?
I'm assuming so, yeah.
That's incredible.
She was fine after the operation, I know that, but I'm not sure now.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I'm just getting visions of, like, soon we're going to be like the salamander. We're going to be having people that have got regenerated limbs and maybe not brain, but or a tail. I mean, that'd be quite cool. I would like a tail. Spinal cord, I guess, is another really important one.
And I mean, it would be amazing. And also, I don't know, you could just have an extra organ just in case.
Just at home on the shelf. It's my spare kidney for when this one gives in. So we talked a little bit at the top of the show about you were saying how do we create these different cells in for the heart, where are we getting them from, and you mentioned fibroblasts, which we would then reprogram to be in the state that they are when we are embryos and able to. So that's called a pluripotent stem cell, I think you told us.
Yeah.
How do we go about doing that?
Yeah, so this is a relatively new technology. It came about in about 2006, and someone actually won a Nobel Prize for that. I'm not surprised. it's pretty amazing. So what they did was they the two scientists, Takahashi and Yamanaka, they got some mice skin cells, and they expressed these proteins that are involved in gene expression, and they expressed them in the skin cells, and after a while they managed to go back into this embryonic cell state, so they completely reversed development. And I mean, it was absolutely amazing. The actual ability to reprogram cells, but there was two scientists working on this, and they selected 24 genes that are involved in keeping cells in a stem cell state.
Mm-hmm.
And they whittled it down to four. So can you imagine how many different
sort of experiments they've had to do to work that out?
Yeah, between two of them.
Wow.
So yeah, they definitely deserve a Nobel Prize for that.
And it's actually only four genes that you need to keep you in a state.
Yeah, so they expressed four in these cells, and it managed to make them into this embryonic state again. And then in 2008, it was achieved in human cells.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
That literally is the future of medicine. Wow.
Yep. See, it transforms medicine, really, because
I mean, especially for regenerative medicine, if you're creating a new organ, you could actually use the patient's own cells.
Absolutely, so then, and that gets rid of that immune problem that we talked about, where your body would otherwise reject the cells and you have to be on lots of drugs to stop your body's immune system from doing that.
Yeah, the immunosuppressing drugs. And the immunosuppressing drugs, you're left with a high risk of infection. And then there's also lots of problems associated with a lifelong regimen of immunosuppressing drugs, such as heart failure and kidney disease.
Well, something a little bit cheerier. Let's have your fifth song. This is Beyoncé and Countdown. I think I can guess your reason, but I'm going to let you say it anyway.
Yep, it's just the wait.
whilst those billions of cells grow.
Yes. If you leave me, you're out of your mind.
Dedicated to the one I love. Yeah. Still love the way he talks. Still love the way I sing. Still love the way he rocks them black diamonds in that chain.
Science.
News. Producer Yaz, you, I think, have the most interesting piece of science news this week.
Oh, thank you.
Go for it.
It's something that I've become just personally fascinated with recently. It's early humans and all types of humans, like Homo sapiens and Neanderthals, and all different types. And what's really interesting is that last week in Nature, we published the fact that we've actually been intermingling with Neanderthals, well, way back earlier than we thought. So the current thinking was that humans and Neanderthals would have mated about 47,000 to 65,000 years ago, but they found a Neanderthal woman with about, I think, between 1% and 7% human DNA, and that she dates back to 110,000 years ago.
Oh,
so that's a big difference. So we've actually gone in the last sort of few decades from believing that Homo sapiens and Neanderthals would never have intermixed. So we would have just either killed them, which is a horrible thought to think that we would be so horrible, or they just naturally died out. There's no remnant of them left anymore. But actually, we all have a little bit of Neanderthal DNA, and it's like a tiny, tiny, tiny bit. But there's even thoughts that it could be responsible for some diseases that we carry now as humans. So it's very interesting to think. And I'm fascinated by just wondering how they would have interacted with each other, like what their relationship would have been to each other. It's almost a shame. I wish there were other humans now. Like, how would you...
Yeah.
Now we're all the same Homo sapiens, and we're so similar in Homo sapiens, like compared to other species, like chimpanzees, for example. I think I read somewhere, so maybe don't quote me on this, but I'm going to say it now, that there's more genetic difference between two groups of chimpanzees living 100 miles apart from each other than there is in the entire human race.
No way.
Yeah. So that we're just very, very similar as a species.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did Neanderthals have language as well?
I don't know. I don't know if we can know that. Yeah. I think their brains were very different to ours, but the idea of them being sort of the typical brutish caveman.
Yeah,
human,
that just says like, ugh.
I don't know how accurate that is. I think they were what we would probably define as advanced, like more advanced than we think. Yeah,
it's very interesting. I'd be fascinated to know how they would have communicated if they did or didn't have the same language.
Yeah, how they would have done it, Just think of them going on a date. To the cave. Great.
Yeah. A Neanderthal cure for the broken heart. Nina, what science news have you brought with you this week?
So this is just about the genome editing technique that's really taken off, called CRISPR. And it's based on a system that's found in bacteria as part of their immune system. So as you've probably heard in the news, it's everywhere at the moment. And they've been using it for all sorts of genome editing, and it's got quite a lot of promise in terms of curing a lot of genetic disorders.
Mm.
But it's actually been approved to use CRISPR in testing for the genes involved in development in human embryos. So they will be allowed to use this technology just for 7 days, just to test.
Seven days within the life of the embryo.
Yeah.
Not just like, here you go, 7 days of your research.
7 days.
Done.
Yeah, just for 7 days.
And tests for about the genes that are involved in reproduction and fertilization, which is quite exciting because to see what that would yield.
Really exciting.
Yeah, and that's in London as well.
And because I know there's a lot of kind of moral, ethical questions around CRISPR and editing embryos, so I think it's good that they've got that 7-day kind of, whatever the word is, bracket on the time that they can use.
Yeah, and then they'll be destroyed and that's it.
My science news this week was just, I love biomimicry whenever I come across it. And also anything to do with kind of water, because that's, you know, it's going to be the sort of thick, everyone talks about climate change and no one really talks about how we're facing like big water shortages, probably because in England we'll be okay, but not maybe in other places in the world. Anyway, so scientists are now taking inspiration from the bumpy shells of namba beetles to improve the collection and transportation of water droplets. And so by copying the kind of bumps they have on their shells, they were able to grow water droplets or take water droplets out of the air 6 times faster than normal. So in a humid atmosphere, they can take the water out of the air.
Wow.
I know. Pretty cool. That is all we have got time for today on the show, which is very, very sad. Nina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
And your final song, OMD Electricity.
Yes, that's just the electrical stimulation that's provided to the heart cells as they're growing in order to, you know...
make sure they start beating.
Start beating. Exactly.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.